I'm Christine Fox. I'm the Acting Deputy Secretary of Defense, and we're here in the Pentagon in my office.
When the military cuts the number of troops, it's called a drawdown. It's been done after every conflict since World War II. This year, the number of U.S. troops may shrink by 50,000, with the possibility of more cuts to come. But Fox says there's nothing else about this that's similar to past drawdowns.
It is the first time we've ever drawn down the force while we were still at war. So somebody deploys to Afghanistan and comes home and is told, you're out of a job. It's a very challenging thing to do.
Another difference, according to Fox, she says there's no talk of a peaceful period ahead. The military calls that a peace dividend. Normally, it gives them time to rethink their priorities. But this time, the military sees no peace dividend. Instead, there are new security concerns from Europe to Asia to the Middle East. By comparison, this isn't the sharpest of drawdowns, but why cut the force now?
This is where the term hollow force comes from. You have a sizable force, can't do everything that you expect it to be able to do because it's too big for the budget that you've been given. We're determined not to let that happen to us this time. But that means we have to get smaller. We have to get a lot smaller, and we have to start yesterday.
The nation's defense budget is somewhere in the range of $600 billion. After years of growth following 9/11 and the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the defense budget is being cut. In 2012, President Obama made about $480 billion in cuts spread over several years. Then came the so-called sequester. It cuts defense spending by another $500 billion over the next decade. Deputy Secretary Fox.
And that requires us to come up with a lot of, frankly, politically challenging things such as changing the compensation for our military, or closing bases, or cutting an acquisition or modernization program, or reducing the size of forces.
Personnel costs are another challenge. This includes things like health care, pensions, and salaries. Those costs have been climbing about 60% faster than inflation. That means it costs more every year just to keep the same number of people. The Pentagon says these costs now make up half their budget. And Mark Gunzinger says these aren't the only problems the Pentagon faces. He's a senior fellow at the defense think tank, CSBA.
It's coming out of its longest war, with a force that in some instances are the smallest it's ever had, the Air Force in particular. And it's the oldest Air Force, the fighters and bombers, that this nation has ever fielded.
And he says solutions to these problems require money.
So there's a need to recapitalize aging capabilities, as well as modernize by buying the next generation of systems that will continue to give us a comparative edge over our future enemies.
But to do this, the Pentagon, White House, and Congress must work together. It requires some consensus on strategy, on how much to spend, and some tough decisions on what to cut. Gunzinger says Congress often ignores the Pentagon's opinion on hot-button issues. That leads to gridlock.
So if you can't retire old force structure, if you can't control the cost of your people programs, if you can't get rid of excess infrastructure through a BRAC process, get rid of old bases you simply don't need, if you can't shrink the size of the force, what's left? What's your choice?
The question is, what do we have a military for?
Retired Marine Major General Arnold Punaro.
So right now, there are trade-offs going on in the Department of Defense between what I'd say are highly trained and well-equipped riflemen and happy retirees, and we're siding with the happy retirees. I'm glad our retirees are happy, but they don't deter aggression. They don't deter terrorists. We need to get back to the core missions of the Department of Defense, which are warfighting.
Even if Congress finds a way to roll back some of the spending cuts, disagreement about what to spend it on will remain a key issue, which raises the question, do the cutbacks in money, troops, infrastructure, do they have an effect on perceptions abroad? Mark Gunzinger says that is the case for allies overseas.
They're worried. They're worried about continuing turbulence in the defense programs that are important to them. They question whether or not we will have the resources to be able to rebalance the Asia-Pacific region.
Major General Punaro.
If you create a vacuum or a perception that you're not going to be engaged in parts of the world, our history shows that bad things happen. So instead of reforming how we spend the dollars internally, we're cutting the warfighting side of the military, we're cutting the troops, we're cutting our warfighting readiness.
For her part, Deputy Secretary Fox says all allies and adversaries deal with their own politics. She says President Obama and Secretary Hagel keep international lines of communication open.
These trips, these travels, these senior level discussions that explain our system, what's going on, how we're handling it, I think can also be very reassuring to our allies and hopefully continue to send the messages we need to send to our potential adversaries.
As far as perception here in Washington, many cheer the idea of cutting spending. But no one seems to like the way the sequester caps spending across the board. Bill Hartung is a defense analyst at CIP.
The administration wants to break the caps. Many in Congress want to break the caps. Defense industry also wants to break the caps. But I think what they're up against is the larger budget politics. There's not going to be any give on taxes on the Republican side, no give on entitlements on the Democratic side.
So even if it's unpopular, the sequester is not an easy thing to fix. Congress must agree on an overall budget deal before they can increase the Pentagon's budget. For America Abroad, I'm Jennifer Strong in Washington.